This is an American Crimecast production. Visit us at our new home at accproductions.org.
This podcast is part of the Bomb Pod Media Network.
All right, before we get started with the second episode of Just Creepy Pastas, I do have to give a very special shout out to Lloyd Clayton over in the UK, who literally just sent me an email about a half an hour ago while I was recording this, telling me how much he enjoyed the show and how good I was doing, and I appreciate that immensely, man. I really do. I'm glad you enjoy the show that I love doing so much. So thank you very much. And as we all know, if the Creepypastas do have an author, I will state the author. If not, then obviously I won't, because I don't know who the fuck it is. I do get these off of the internet, so, you know, you can find them just about anywhere. Other than that, I do have two people who submitted audio for their own stories. Sammy submitted two stories, and those are done in her voice with her audio. And the other one is Casey, who submitted her own audio. So I appreciate that, ladies. Thank you very much. And I guess I'll put on my creepy murder voice and get on with the show. This story was written by Anonymous. And it's called Lost Twin, The Game. This is a game where the participants get the chance to meet the twin they've never known in life. It's a simple game to play, but the repercussions can be overwhelming. The twin is a reflection of who you really are, not who you pretend to be. If you're a genuinely good person, your twin encounter will be pleasant and gratifying. If you're a bad person, someone who bullies, lies, steals, cheats, manipulates, or hurts other people, then your experience will be dark and painful. In order to play the game, you require the following: an empty closet, a lit candle, and a mirror. To start, hang the mirror, any size will do, on the wall in the closet. Be sure to hang it on the wall across from the closet door, so the door is being reflected when closed. With the candle already lit, walk into the closet and shut the door behind you. Look at the mirror. You'll see a reflection of yourself and the closed door. Knock on the mirror twice, just as if you're trying to knock on the closet door. Blow out the candle and knock on the mirror two more times. You'll hear the closet door open, but the door behind you is still shut. Next, you'll hear breathing, and the game has begun. In a calm voice, greet your twin with a simple hello, and wait for their response. Afterward, ask a simple yes or no question. They will answer. The twin will respond in one of two ways: a kind response or a hostile response. Good people will receive a kind hello in return for their greeting. Ask your question and your answer will be whispered back to you. Shortly after, a sense of warmth and comfort will overcome the player. The sound of the door shutting will signal the end of the game, as your twin has made contact, passed on their message, and left the closet. Bad people will receive an angry, animalistic snarl in response. If you try to ask a question, you will be answered with scratches or bites from your twin. Bone-chilling cold will fill the closet, and a sense of impending doom will bring about an unshakable feeling of dread that will linger for hours. You'll hear the sound of the closet door slamming shut, and the mirror will fall off the wall, shattering into pieces. When you leave the closet, be sure to take the mirror with you, intact or broken. If you leave the mirror behind, you'll be plagued by your twin's voice calling out to you and knocking on walls until you remove the mirror. This game reveals a lot about a person's soul. Player beware.
Day 3 of the rituals. Dark reflection. Here's what you'll need to do this ritual. A mirror of any type, a candle of any size or color, friends to do it with, but this is optional, but highly suggested. I should probably warn you, once you begin this ritual, there's no way to stop it. What I'm saying is, don't start it unless you're planning to finish it. Have you ever broken a mirror by accident or on purpose? Have you ever looked into a mirror and felt like there was something watching you from the other side? Or seen something sinister looking within the eyes of your own reflection? You've probably heard the legend that breaking a mirror is 7 years bad luck. Legend about mirrors have been around for hundreds of years. In particular, some ancient civilizations believed that there were some sort of purifying effects to mirrors. They believed that by looking into one's own reflection, it would transfer a person's negative energy into the reflection in the mirror. They believed that this had a cleansing effect, but also hidden dangers. That's why breaking a mirror has been known to cause bad luck. Think about it. If this is true, then every time you look into a mirror, you are transferring negative energy into it. Can you imagine just how much negative energy is just sitting there inside of your bathroom mirror? When you break the mirror, that negative energy is released and causes bad luck for everyone around it. For this ritual to work, you will need a mirror that you don't mind breaking. According to the manifesto, both the risk and the eventual reward for this ritual are stronger depending on how old the mirror is. It makes sense if you think about it. An older mirror has been looked into more and therefore has more negative energy inside of it. In order to begin the ritual, you must look your reflection in the eyes, transferring your negative energy into the mirror one last time. You only need to do this for a few seconds. Then you need to lean forward and breathe onto the mirror, making it fog up with your breath. My sources refer to this as anointing the mirror with your breath. At first, you might find this strange, but do a little digging and I think you'll find that the word breath once meant something similar to spirit. By breathing onto the mirror, you're symbolically linking yourself to the mirror and to the negative energy contained inside. This linking is critical to the success of the ritual. Everyone in the group needs to do this step as well, before moving on to the next. After this is completed, you can light the candle. Use the candle to burn the mirror. This agitates the negative energy inside. You only need to do this for a few seconds, or until there is a noticeable black mark on the mirror. Note, the longer you do this for, the more agitated the negative energy will become. After this, the final step is breaking the mirror. Once this step is done, I suggest you start running. You see, it's actually a common misconception that when a person breaks a mirror, they will be followed by bad luck. This is not true. When a mirror is broken, the bad energy stays in one spot, near the broken mirror, until it eventually dissipates, or at least it normally does. If you completed the above steps, then you have tied yourself to the negative energies through the medium of your breath. This means that the negative energy will pursue you wherever you go. This is why I said earlier that it would be best to complete this ritual with a group. If there is only one person doing this ritual, then all the negative energy will pursue that one person. But if there is a group, then the negative energy will spread more thinly. This increases your odds of survival. Bad luck will follow you throughout the night. At first, it will start out as small incidents, a chipped nail or a flat tire. The incidents will begin to escalate, and increasingly horrific things will begin to happen around you. Eventually, these incidents will become life-threatening. No matter how many people you did the ritual with, like I said, don't start this ritual unless you're planning to finish it. The only piece of advice I can give you for surviving the night is to remember that the negative energy is linked to you through your breath. Your breath is how the negative energy detects you, and so, if you find yourself in a bad situation, try holding your breath. This should make you temporarily invisible to it. Of course, you can only hold your breath for so long. Still, this technique might provide you with a few extra seconds to get out of a dangerous situation. At this point, you are probably asking yourself why on earth would anybody ever engage in this ritual? Why would anyone ever risk their life like this? Well, most people who try this probably didn't think that would actually work. But there is a reason behind that. The bad luck will chase you throughout the night, but if you manage to survive until dawn, not only will you find that your run of foul luck has ended, but a new streak of good luck is about to begin. The first lights of dawn have a special purifying property. If you survive until the morning, then the negative energy inside the mirror will be purified and will re-enter your body, filling you to the brim with positive energy. After this, everything will seem to go your way. You'll find that people are generally nicer to you, and that the opposite sex are extremely attracted to you, or the same sex, if that's your thing. You will succeed at everything you do, whether it be a job interview, an important exam, or a business venture. I would highly suggest buying a lottery ticket. It should be noted that the amount and duration of your good luck will be equivalent to the amount of negative energy that was in the mirror. If you just bought the mirror at the store, then the good luck will only last a couple of days and will not all be severe. If you use an old mirror, though, then your lucky streak will be far more powerful and may last for months or even years. If you use an old enough mirror, though, then your lucky streak will be far more powerful and may last for months or even years. If you use a mirror that has more personal connection to you, such as a bathroom mirror or a mirror from your bedroom, then the good fortune you experience will be more suitable to your particular tastes and desires. One more thing I should probably warn you about is the timing of the ritual. The ritual needs to be started after sunset and with at least 6 hours until dawn. Two common tricks that people try to use in regards to this ritual are starting during the daytime and starting a few minutes before dawn. Starting near dawn is probably the least dangerous of these little cheats. If you start near dawn, then the negative energy will not have enough time to fully manifest before being purified. The energy will simply dissipate into the air rather than doing anything, and you'll probably walk away thinking it was just a gigantic hoax. Starting during the day is more dangerous. People start during the day thinking that the daylight will instantly nuke the bad energy and keep them safe. This is not true. Notice that I said it was the lights of the dawn that have the purifying power, not the light of the day. By starting during the day, you actually give the bad luck more time to pursue you and thus decrease your odds of survival significantly. You know, a lot of people might call you stupid or crazy for trying to attempt this ritual. I wouldn't, though. I can understand the thinking that goes into it. I can understand the wanting to take control of your luck, both good and bad, rather than accepting the seemingly random twists and turns that life seems to throw at us.
This next story was written by a user named Bob the Skeleton, and I will not tell you the title until after it, because it just might give away the ending. I awoke to the sounds of a siren blaring down the road. Great, another accident. The traffic was the last thing I wanted in the morning while going to work. Still, I had another hour before heading off, so I started my morning routine of taking a shower and brushing my teeth before heading downstairs for breakfast, where I saw my son, Michael, eating cereal. I grabbed a bagel and sat down on the couch, grabbing my iPad to read the news. Quote, terrorist leader Amir Hadi has threatened the president, end quote. Same old news. Nothing was new about it. All this drama for years between the Middle East and the good old America. How long had we been at war? I can't even remember. Too long, for sure. All these terrorist attacks and the president just sends in more and more soldiers, feeding a war without end. Pointless as middle school drama, but with more consequences. Whatever. Who needs CNN anyways? Flipping on the TV and putting down my iPad, I noticed more sirens flying down my street. Just then I got an email from the school saying the buses would be late. Must be a big wreck. Hey Michael, your bus is going to be delayed for a bit, okay bud? Alright, Dad, he replied nonchalantly. I imagined he would probably be playing on his phone, or whatever kids do these days. I left the TV on as I went upstairs to iron my shirt for work. I grabbed a dull blue, matching my mood this fine morning. I headed to the garage to grab the ironing board, before remembering it being in my laundry room. I set it up and left my coffee to heat up. As I steamed the wrinkles out of my clothes, I listened to the TV playing some old cheesy comedy show. I heard my wife come downstairs and felt her lips against mine as she gave me a good morning kiss. I love that woman. I told her, hey, Michael's bus is going to be a bit late today. I guess there's been a wreck, and it's been holding them up. She asked in a pressing tone, okay. Did he get all of his homework done? I told her, I think so. You hear that, bud? He says, yeah, it didn't take very long. Then I glanced back at my coffee, seeing the green light come on. I went upstairs to get dressed and came back down a minute later to kill some time on the TV before I headed off. After 3 minutes or so, I changed to Fox News to see the status of the wreck, and my heart skipped a beat. The video showed reports of worldwide chaos, with screaming, crazed destruction everywhere. The terrorist group had set off nuclear warfare. It was World War III. It was happening here and now. I felt a wave of panic go off as the feed showed mushroom clouds rising high above the city, burning everything around it. The channel showed signs of interference, and I heard my son call out from the second floor landing. Hey, Dad, the internet's out. And the name of that story is The Internet's Out.
If you were to ask me what events in my life I could recall in the greatest of detail, I'd tell you they would be my senior prom, the day I got married, and the moment my children were born, and the times I can remember being taken. I never imagined these events would ever happen to me. I never thought that I'd be one of the chosen. For you see, I'm just an average woman, a stay-at-home mom and housewife. Looking back on it, apparently I was a good candidate, a donor, if you will. The first strange occurrence I remember happened in May of 2009, on a Wednesday, somewhere around 2:30 a.m. I awoke to the feeling of being watched. However, I never could see anyone in the darkness of my room. There were many nights like this in the beginning. One night, I woke up to the same feeling, so I went to go check on my two boys, who were fast asleep in their beds. As I was walking down the hall to go back to my room, I looked to my left into the guest bedroom and saw a small, dark, and slender figure looming in the darkness of the room. I immediately got an overwhelming feeling of dread. So I turned on the light, and it disappeared, as if there was nothing there to begin with. I ran back to my room to wake up my husband, terrified that someone had broken into our home. He got out of bed, and we checked the entire house. Doors were locked, windows were locked, and there was no trace that anyone had come into our home. Of course, my husband thought I was crazy. I remember there were many days, for months, that hours of my day would be missing. I'd lay down to take a nap on the couch, then I'd wake up in my bed. My hair would be in disarray. I'd notice bruises on my thighs and upper arms that I couldn't explain. The most mysterious part is that bruises seemed to be in the shape of finger marks, almost as if I was in a struggle and being restrained. I would also notice small round indentions on my legs, as if my skin had been scooped off. I also had bouts of nausea, dizzy spells, nosebleeds, and migraines. In April of 2010, around the time of my birthday, I remember one night, I was asleep in bed. I woke up feeling like I was in that in-between stage of sleep, where I was conscious but yet still asleep. My eyes were open, but I couldn't move or speak. I could feel a lot of static electricity in the atmosphere. My entire body began to tingle, like the tingling you feel in your arm or foot when it falls asleep. I then felt a sharp pain in the pit of my stomach and a pulling sensation. It almost felt as if I was being pulled in various directions at the same time. All of a sudden, I started getting flashes of visions in my mind. Visions of hands with long, slender gray fingers. They were touching me, grabbing me. They were restraining me and poking me with needles. The vision stopped and then darkness. I don't remember anything after that. The next morning, I awoke, remembering the visions. I had no idea what I experienced, so I chalked it up to possibly an episode of sleep paralysis. Then in September of 2010, on a Monday night, I remember going to bed. Dishes were done, kids and husband in bed, so I went to bed. I found myself being more tired than usual. As soon as my head hit the pillow, I was out. I began to wake up slowly at first. I could feel sweat rolling down my face. The air around me was very humid and dense. I could hear a soft humming in my ears. I slowly began to open my eyes, feeling as though I was waking up from being sedated. My vision was a bit blurry at first, so all I could see was light. I got that strange feeling again that I was being watched, so I pushed myself to wake more quickly. As I was coming more into consciousness and my vision cleared, I realized I was naked and strapped to what looked like an examination table. I thought to myself, why would I be on such a thing? I was just in my bed. I struggled and tried to get free, but try as I might, my attempts were useless. I began to look around the room I was in, which appeared to be empty, except I saw a table with an ambient white light illuminating the table from within it. I saw what looked like some sort of metal tools on the table. Again, a feeling of dread washed over me, not knowing where I was, what those tools were for, and who would be using them. I continued scanning the room, but all I saw was light, and beyond that, darkness. I sat strapped to this table for what seemed like hours. Then I realized I was no longer alone when I caught movement out of the corner of my eye. Four strange-looking creatures emerged from the darkness and surrounded the table with the tools on it. They were small, thin, and had a gray skin tone. They had large, bulbous heads and large black eyes. I called out to them asking, "Where am I and who are you?" One of them turned in a very eerie motion and peered at me. I then heard an ominous voice inside my head say, "We do not have to explain ourselves to you, so do not expect us to." I continued to struggle, my grunts and groans seeming to go unnoticed by the creatures, until I thrashed very hard and screamed, "Let me go!" One of the creatures proceeded in my direction. It grabbed my wrist with intense pressure, peering deep into my eyes. Again, I heard an ominous voice in my head say, "The less you struggle, the easier this will be for you." They never actually spoke to me using their mouth. The feeling I got from them was a cold and emotionless feeling. The other creatures came to join it. They gathered around me. I noticed one creature holding one of the tools in its hand. The same type of hands I saw in the visions I had that night in April. I saw it bringing the tool closer and closer to the inside of my thigh. I feel one of its cold hands grasp the inside of my thigh. Dare I say what happened next? I felt as though I was being raped. I tossed my head back in intense discomfort, clenching my teeth. My body tensed up and I screamed in pain. I felt a lot of pressure and then I felt as if I was being pierced with a needle from deep inside my pelvis. I continued screaming, but I dared not to move. Things went blank after that. I woke up in my bed as if it was all a terrible nightmare. Only I knew it wasn't a nightmare considering the physical evidence on my body of this strange and terrifying occurrence. Things were quiet for about 3 years, my mind occasionally going back to those horrifying events only once in a while. It took 2 of those years to feel halfway normal again, after much therapy and many depression and anxiety meds. I never told my therapist what I really thought happened to me. My explanation to her was simply that I had been raped. Looking back now, in a sense, I was raped. In the summer of 2013, I believe it was June 16th, it was bedtime. I laid down to go to sleep. I again awoke feeling as though I had found myself in a rainforest-like climate, listening to the same humming sound. In my mind, I screamed, "Oh my God, I know where I am!" Imminent fear and a feeling of dread crept over me once again. I can't believe I'm here again! I was frozen in fear. I see 3 creatures emerge from the darkness as they approach me. This time, there was a smaller creature with the 2 larger creatures. The small one, however, looked different than the taller ones. As they came closer, I could see details, features, on the small one. It appeared to be a child, at least that's the feeling that emanated from it. It had the same slender build and gray skin tone, only it had patches of thin, dark, wavy hair. Its eyes were smaller, but had a blue tint to them. Its face and head was round, with tiny, very light freckles spattered across its face. Much to my dismay, I realized what these creatures did and who this child belonged to. For I too have dark wavy hair, blue eyes, and freckles. I wasn't sure what or how to feel. All I knew was that this was very strange and twisted. The child creature peered deep into my eyes, almost as if it knew me. In some strange way, I felt as though I also knew this child, like it was a part of me. I began to feel lightheaded, my eyes feeling heavy. I then closed them. I awoke in my bed, daylight was streaming through my blinds. I lay there in bed wondering how many other women and even men have been forced to donate a piece of themselves to creatures we may never see again or understand. Every day I think of those creatures and I wonder, why me? And I always hope this never happens again. Since then, my husband and I have tried many times to conceive, but with no success. I'm 28 and in perfect health. However, test after test comes back inconclusive, with no explanation as to why I can no longer have any more children.
The final day of the rituals. The 3 kings. Introduction. You have to be big on preparation if you want to try this. It's like skydiving. If getting it right on your first try is not something you're good at, then this is not for you. If you do drugs or alcohol the night of this event, you're going to have a bad time. If you're going through some serious issues in your life and are not feeling mentally or spiritually stable, or if you're doing this just to escape, you're going to have a bad time. And if you don't follow my instructions, particularly the multiple backups I'll give you, which trust me, are there for a reason, you're going to have a really bad time. The name of this game is the 3 kings, by the way. Things you'll need. 1. A very large, empty, and quiet room, preferably without windows. If windows exist, you need to be able to cover them to ensure total darkness. Basements usually work well if they're roomy enough. 2. A pack of candles. You will only use 1 if all goes well, and a lighter. 3. A bucket of water and a mug. 4. A fan. 5. 2 large mirrors, like the one on your dresser. Don't worry, they won't be harmed, or if they are, it'll be the least of your concerns. 6. 3 chairs. 7. An alarm clock. 8. An active cell phone. Don't forget to charge the goddamn battery. 9. A loved one willing to follow the rules and go along with all of this madness. 10. A small toy or dear object from your childhood. Preparation. 1. Start setup around 11 p.m. Place one chair in the center of the room facing north. This is important. Place the other two chairs exactly to the left and right, facing your throne. The distance between your throne and that of your queen and fool should be the length of your arm to each side, more or less. 2. Place the two large mirrors on the queen and fool's chairs left and right of you, facing you and each other. Try your best to have them stand at a 90-degree angle, or else you may get more or less than 3 kings. If you sit on your throne, facing straight ahead north, you should be able to perceive your own reflection in each of the two mirrors without actually having to turn your head, nor your eyes to do so. If you see your own reflection in the corner of your eye, just barely there, you've done it right. 3. Place the bucket of water and the mug in front of you, just barely out of reach. 4. Place the fan behind you and turn it on. Don't set it to maximum power. Medium or low is usually enough. Leave it on. 5. Turn off the lights, leave the door open, and go to your bedroom. 6. Set the candles by the side of the bed, next to a lighter, your alarm clock, and your cell phone. Leave it charging, and set your alarm for 3:30 a.m. 7. Turn off the lights and sleep while holding your power object. Get some rest. How to do it. Step 1. Wake up at 3:30 a.m. with your alarm clock. Turn it off, but don't turn on the light. You have exactly 3 minutes to light your candle, grab your cell phone, and make your way to the dark room to sit on your throne. You should be seated by 3:33 a.m. Step 2. Don't forget your power object. Step 3. Check for potential red flags. If your cell phone did not charge for whatever reason, abort the mission. If the alarm didn't go off at exactly 3:30 a.m., abort the mission. If you find the dark room door closed, remember you left it open, abort the mission. If the fan is turned off, you left it on, abort the mission. This is a side note. If you have to abort the mission due to any of the above, leave the house with your loved one. Go to a hotel or something. There's no need to run. You have time to grab a jacket and your keys, but you need to leave. After 6 a.m., the coast should be clear. Step 4. If all goes as planned, you can proceed and take your throne. Do not look at either of the two mirrors beside you. Do not let the candle go out. The fan is behind you. You must protect the candle with your body, which is standing in between. There's a reason for this, and soon you'll see. Step 5. Look straight ahead at the darkness. Not at the candle, not at the mirrors, just straight ahead. Eagle-eyed readers surely noticed I didn't say during the setup which chair was the queen and which chair was the fool. That's because it's your job to find out. And from their point of view, you're either their queen or their fool too, hence the three kings. Note: 1. Do not look directly at the mirrors nor the candle, just straight ahead, trust me. Don't chicken out either. You need to wait until at least 4:34. By 4:34, it's all over. Number 2. Do not let the candle go out. That's what the fan is for. You're protecting the candle with your body, but if your body were suddenly moved, then the fan would blow out the candle. That's backup number 1. Number 3. Backup number 2. At 4:34, they have to come in the room and call your name. And if that won't work, they have to call your cell phone. If that won't work, they have the glass of water and the bucket. They can't touch you, though. That's a newbie mistake. Number 4. Backup number 3 is your item of power, the toy or locket or whatever object of strength you brought along for the ride. It'll show you the way if shit hits the fan.
This story was written by Eric Lawrence, and it's entitled Lakeside. 3:47 p.m., August 4th, 1973. My name is Kevin Matthews. I am at the Matthews Lakeside Cabin in Black Rock Park, which I received in my dad's will. I'm writing this to document my odd findings of my family's lake house. I've been looking at real estate ads in the paper to get a good idea of how much I can get off this place. I then looked through some old newspapers and read articles about murders and strange, unexplainable occurrences at a cabin by Lake Buchanan called Camp Matt. After hearing of this, I had to get answers. 9:14 p.m., August 5th, 1973. Today I spoke with someone who witnessed some phenomena. A man named Clausen Andale. Mr. Andale said he was staying at Camp Matt for about 3 days, and on the third night, he said he saw a man standing under the tall oak out front, staring into the cabin windows. Another odd thing. Clausen said that the man was wearing the same clothes that he was. That he was imitating him. Another, Ruth Oakley, found her husband Dylan stabbed to death under the tall oak at Camp Matt in 1953. She swore her innocence to the police and that she had nothing to do with his death. But the only prints found on the knife were hers, and she claims she only touched the knife after pulling it out of her husband. She also told police that she locked the doors at night, but they were unlocked from the inside in the morning. After hearing about this tall oak out front both times, I realized this was no coincidence. Through more research, I found that Camp Matt was the name of this place up until 1954. Clausen's encounter happened in 1952, Ruth's in 1953. I'm staying at a crime scene only 3 years younger than myself. This changes my whole perspective on things. 9 a.m., August 7th. I saw the man Mr. Andale described through the window, but this time he was dressed just like me. Blue jeans with a hole on the right knee, plaid shirt, and a ripped-up baseball cap. He didn't budge at all. Every hour or so I would wake up just to see him standing there in the exact same spot under the tree. I can't call the police. I can't leave. I fear for my life. August 9th. Time unknown. There is no longer any electricity in the lake house. I tried to leave when it was daylight outside, but when I opened the door it was night, and the man was still standing there. I think he's holding an axe. August 11th. It's morning again, I think. My watch says it's 5:13 p.m., but that's most likely false. I've been trying to keep track of the date, but this has all been very confusing. I think it's been 6 days. I've tried over and over to leave during the day when it's safe, but every time I open the door, it's fucking nighttime. My watch says 5:13 p.m., but it could be 9:35 p.m., or 3:18 a.m., or 11:29 p.m., or any other time other than 5:13 p.m. I've placed myself in this inescapable house, and the nearest telephone is 34 miles away in Llano. I'm helpless. Time unknown, date unknown. I can no longer keep track of the date. I looked out the window and saw 8 corpses wrapped in sheets hung upside down on the branches of the tree, and they were soaked in blood. The man with the axe is still in his spot, waiting for me to step out there. I've run out of options. I'm going outside. Time unknown, date unknown. I'm outside. I stood in the light of the lamp mounted on the tree. I keep seeing a man inside the house. He keeps staring at me through the windows. He looks exactly like me. I found an axe at the tree's base. The man in the house is an imposter. He will come out of there, and when he does, it'll all be over.